Hi, it's Laura Norkin, deputy editor at InStyle.com. We're working on a new season of Ladies First with Laura Brown. In the meantime, please enjoy an episode we love from season one. Here's Laura Brown's chat with the British actress and singer, Cynthia Erivo. Enjoy.
There's moments where I'm totally sweaty outside running the 6 mile and I hate everything because everything hurts and I'm going to share it with you. I'm trying to sort of like remove the guise of perfection so that people don't assume that it's perfect all the time. I'm on a bike singing because you're going to hear me out of breath and I'm going to be sweaty and it's going to be kind of like whatever note comes out, it doesn't. And I'm not afraid of that.
Welcome to Ladies First with Laura Brown. I'm Laura Brown, editor-in-chief of InStyle magazine, and each week I'm talking to a different major lady about what she does, how she does it, and what we can learn from her. This week I'm chatting with Cynthia Erivo. Now here's the thing with Cynthia, she's the kind of gal that will get on the Peloton, go on Instagram Live and sing I Am Every Woman at the same time. She's got a Tony, she's got an Emmy, she's got 2 Academy Award nominations, and she's cool as hell. Guess what, Cynthia Erivo? Guess what? You're a guest on Ladies First, because you're rad. 1. 2, because you're first in what you do.
Yay!
No, and you just are a giver of total joy. And as I would say, if I were a New York Times reviewer from perhaps the 1970s, I'd say an incandescent talent.
I like that.
Now you are joining me from Atlanta, Georgia, and you are down there right now filming the Aretha Franklin Genius film, and you're a little getting closer to the end.
Close to it. We had 2-3 episodes when we left, and we've been filming them consecutively, so we're filming them all at once. We finished episode 6. I think we're at the very end of episode 7, and we're close to finishing episode 8. Yeah.
God, that's a lot, isn't it? And then with all of the stopping and starting, and I mean, and it's just filming anything in the age of COVID is not nothing. And are you getting COVID tested every 35 seconds?
Yes, pretty much. I had one today.
I wanted just to say, when we talk about how we first met and then get to it. So you and I met on a photo shoot.
Yeah, for Michael Kors, right?
For Michael Kors. It was a dinner party idea. And it was like, oh, the jazziest ladies in town. And Michael Kors. And it was, God, it was summer 3-something years ago.
Oh, yeah. Wow, that was a long time ago.
We were young then. Actually, you're still
That's
young.
That's crazy.
I have this artful picture of you that I took then. And now, funnily enough, about 3-something years later, we took more artful pictures of you. For the cover of InStyle magazine in October. It's been so lovely to watch you. You've so acquitted yourself in everything you've done, but just to see you now. Just
oh, thank you very much. I don't realize how fast the time has gone. So you say 3 years ago and it felt like a week ago. It's so strange. It's been a wild ride from then to now, a very wild ride.
And speaking of wild ride, so Cynthia's great and everything, but she's also annoying because the other day I'm on Instagram and she's on live and just on the Peloton while simultaneously belting out note perfect I'm Every Woman.
I mean, it wasn't note perfect. Peloton's really fun for me because they have great music and it makes getting through these bike rides a lot easier than most other activities. And this song came on and I just felt like singing it.
I think one of the things that folks love about you most, especially in the last really difficult few months that we've all had at home, is you started, you're at home in LA, as everybody else was, and you started singing on your Instagram, and the most just beautiful, really affirming song. So tell me about the first one you sang and tell me about how you decided that you wanted to share that.
The very first one was Somewhere, I think it was. I was actually still here in Atlanta and we just shut down. And a friend of mine reached out and said, I feel really bad and I would love to hear you sing this song because I know it would make me smile. So I did an audio recording for her and sent it to her just so she could listen. And she said, I think you should post that. I think you should just do a quick video and just post it for people because I think it will make people feel good. So I did a quick video. It's black and white. There's no makeup. I think I've just woken up and I posted it and people seem to sort of come to it. And whenever there are moments where I feel like, well, we could really use something to just lift our spirits or I'm not feeling great and this will help to sort of ease what I'm feeling, that's when I tend to sing.
the two qualities I think about with you immediately are joy and presence. When was the first time that you felt like you really performed?
Probably when I was 15 and I did a production, like a youth production of Romeo and Juliet, and played Juliet. I remember thinking, oh, this feels like it's a real play. Like it feels like it's a real show. We did it in like one of the studios at the Young Vic. We only had like two or three productions or production days. And I just remember really enjoying it.
When you really hit the wherefore art thou, Romeo, did you surge?
It's actually a really beautiful speech. And I think people don't realize how lovely it is. I can't remember all of it for now, but it's just such a real love story. And when you're 15 and you're doing Romeo and Juliet, which is actually about the ages that they were, it just felt truer because you can't help but like be as honest as possible at that age.
Or you're so in your feelings, aren't you?
Yeah. Totally emo, still figuring things out, still calibrating. Hormones are everywhere, so you're just trying to figure it out. And I think that being able to do that show also made me really understand Shakespeare and how useful it was to me as a young Black girl, because that stuff is not usually accessible to you when you're that age. And in London, it's only accessible to a certain type of person, and it's usually not a young Black girl from the Southwest London. And somehow I managed to find it. I think a friend dragged me to this thing where she was signing up, and she was like, you should sign up too. So I was like, okay, I'll sign up too. And then ended up getting the leading role.
When did you realize that you had a presence? Now, realizing you have presence is not an egocentric realization. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It is just, when did you realize that you had some command?
Probably when I started doing like talent shows or open mic nights in London. I think that's probably when I realized I had some sort of presence. Like I would sing in clubs, and there's one place that I used to do the arts club, and I don't know what it was, but for some reason people would come around and they'd stand around and they would listen and they would dance. And I remember there was one evening where I was performing, and this one woman who I remember distinctly because she looked like Barbara Streisand. It was very odd, but she wasn't Barbara Streisand. She would come to the arts club, and if I wasn't there, she wouldn't come in. She was like, is Cynthia here? She would ask if I was in.
And they'd say, I'm sorry, not Barbara.
Not today. And then she would like, well, let me know when she's coming back. So she would come to all the performances that I would do. Don't know who she was, don't know where she came from, but she would make it a point to only be there when I was there.
Paging the woman who might be a little bit older now, who looks like Barbara Streisand in London.
If you see this, you're amazing and you made the night so much easier. And she would come up to the front and she would dance and she would be like totally in her element. And it would be brilliant because she'd be right in front of me. It'd just be brilliant. She was amazing.
When did you silence a room?
I guess this might be an obvious answer, but the first sort of three notes of I don't need you to love me in The Color Purple, could you do a pin drop? Yeah.
So just need some attention at a deli or something, do you just pull it out?
Just drop those three notes.
Just,
it should be
honey,
fine.
I need some more Della. No. I've got great ideas for you in your grocery area.
I think I need them, so I'm going to use them from now on.
Tell me, you went to RADA, which stands for the Royal Academy of Dramatic Art, which sounds super, super scary. What was that process like?
It started off with me saying I absolutely did not want to go and audition for this place just because I thought I would not get in. And then my arm was twisted by someone to fill in the application form under duress. I wanted to do a young actors course at a theatre, and the person who was taking the young actors course wouldn't let me do it unless I promised to audition for a drama school and promised to audition for this specific drama school. And I was like, I'm not going to get in, so no. And she said, well, if you don't, you don't come to this. So I was like, okay, fun.
I'll fill out your form. Fine.
I'll audition. Thinking I was being like rebellious, I didn't audition for anywhere else, just apply for this particular school. And then went to the audition. The first round, you do two speeches and an interview. Second round, you do two speeches, an unaccompanied song, and an interview. Third round, you're working in groups on a speech. fourth round, you work on your speech and you say it in front of the prospective students and the faculty.
In front of everybody?
Yeah.
Ooh.
In front of everyone. So the first time round, I was like, okay, this might be well. I know my pieces. I worked on them. So I said my pieces, had my interview, and they were lovely. Great. Didn't think anything of it. Got a second round. Fine. I go in, I do my second round. I do my song. It's a fine, fine line from Avenue Q because it was unexpected and I really loved it. And then I sit down to do this interview, and one of the interviewers asked me if I didn't get into this school, would I apply for another school? And I went to be like really PC and say, well, yes, I would, because, you know, I really love acting. I was going to say that, but what came out of my mouth was no. No, I won't, because I don't want to. This is where I want to go, so that's where I want to go. Yeah. And they all laughed. I think it's probably the first honest thing that they had heard from someone this day. I get a third round. So do the third round. I get through to the fourth round. Fourth round, I work on a speech from a play called Othello, Shakespeare. And I pick a speech, and another person in the group also picks the same speech. She goes up before me. She starts speaking the speech and she forgets the words. Jives, totally. And my immediate reaction is to feed her the words, feed her the lines. So from where I'm sitting, I give her the next line. And I give her the next line until she's able to get up and running again. And she goes, she does it, all good. I get up, I do the speech, we both get in.
We better be BFFs now.
Strangely enough, I haven't spoken to her for a really long time. We didn't become close, but she was the sweetest person. And it was just really cool that we shared that moment and we both got into this place.
Yeah, study versus instinct. I mean, I think that your instincts are obviously fantastic. But well, how did you hone your stage ability? Like, how much of that did you have to apply some outside discipline to your gut?
Well, I think for me, the main thing from drama school that I learned about was my vulnerability. I don't think that acting is really about putting on something you don't know. I think it's really about accessing things that you are familiar with, that you can tag onto something else. I learned at drama school that vulnerability really is my strong suit. I try and find the vulnerability in each of the characters. So what is it that this person wants, and how can I access the most insecure, vulnerable part of this person, because then I can probably find out what they want by doing that. That tends to be how I work. And it's worked so far. You learn how to tap into things you already know, tap into feelings that you already have, tap into experiences you've already had in order to tell the story of someone else. I would say a 60-40 split. 60% is your gut, 40 is skill. And I think if you combine them together, you could get something special.
Welcome back to Ladies First with Laura Brown. I am her. I am also the editor-in-chief of InStyle magazine and have been lucky enough to come across the incredible Cynthia Erivo. Today we're talking about how she does what she does, which is be an amazing actress and a singer who hits all the right notes. I want to ask her about her presence. Tell me, what gives you the most confidence in what you do, and what do you still worry about?
Gives me the most confidence. I think when people see themselves in the characters I play, and when it's just an honest reaction. I get people sending messages, like I played a character called Holly Gibney on a show called The Outsider, and she is on the spectrum, the autism spectrum, and she, again, those women are rarely on television. You don't get to see them very often, and those women on the autism spectrum usually don't look like me if they are on TV. And so I had a lot of young Black women on the spectrum or with children on the spectrum reach out to me after the show to say, hey, thank you for this, because never seen this and I can really relate. And now my kid has something to look at because you're like her or you're like him on this show. And that's what gives me confidence, because that tells me, oh, it was the right song, the right tune, the right space, the right temper, because someone sees that is their reality and they can completely align themselves with that. If I can play characters that can keep doing that, that can keep bringing people who haven't seen themselves before, then I'm really happy.
I mean, and isn't that something that is top of mind right now as well? This, we're post-election having this conversation, and just to have a young girl see something that we would hope that she can then take for granted, and what you can contribute to that, that must just be the most gratifying thing.
Totally. I mean, you know, when I have parents reach out to me because their little girls want to be actresses and they've seen some of my stuff or they've seen me perform somewhere and they can't stop talking about this person, or they've listened to a song and they only want to listen to the song over and over again. It's just great. When Stand Up came out, I had loads of mothers and daughters sending videos of themselves in their cars listening to it together. The idea that my song can bring a mother and daughter together at such different ages, and they find some common ground in this song.
And just something that you've put out into, you're going about your work and you're passionate about your work, but when you put something into the culture that stays with people and you make a thing, there is nothing like that. I mean, from an image to ever, I just think that is, I say that to the young ladies, a lot. It's like, make a thing and that gives you ownership. And again, not in an ego way. It's not about, ooh, look what I did. I really, it's the most special thing. Tell me what makes you nervous.
Oh, what makes me nervous? I only get nervous just before I go on to perform. I always get nervous before I go on to perform because I care. And I think I'm nervous that one day I won't be nervous anymore.
You're meta nervous, yes.
I don't want to get to a place where I'm like, oh yeah, this is fine, I'll just go up and do this. I don't ever want to feel like that, because if I ever feel like that, it means I just don't care enough, that it doesn't matter that much to me. And every performance matters. Even when I'm doing one song, it matters to me. Like, even if it's the shortest song in the world and it's like a 2-second a cappella situation, I get nervous. Always.
Yeah, otherwise, you got to be a little clenchy. Otherwise, yeah. What the hell?
Why am I there? What are we doing?
Why are you even there? What do you listen if you're trying to pump yourself up? If you're trying to, like, pump up the gym? Like, what's your thing?
Disco.
Go on.
I listen to disco music. I am obsessed with Earth, Wind & Fire. There's a band called Boney M. I don't know if you ever heard of them.
Of course I know Boney M. I'm older than you, girly.
But some people don't know who they are. And listen, they're very acquired taste, but they are brilliant. Okay.
They're pure disco.
Pure disco. Who else? I love a little bit of Donna Summer occasionally as well when I'm trying to pump myself up. And you know what? The last Beyonce's The Gift, that's full of songs that get me going.
She's good. She's good, Beyonce.
She's all right, you know.
In these past few years, which has been so rapid, you're well known. You are a famous lady. How have you metabolized the growing amount of attention on you?
I try to make sure that I keep people around me who are as grounded as I am and can keep me grounded and aren't afraid to check me if I do something wrong. I want people who know more about things than I do around me as well, because I don't think that my learning ever stops. And I think that's what keeps me normal, because I think I want to stay normal. I don't want to be, I guess, is unattainable the word?
You know, the word I really hate, actually, and it gets used a lot in fashion magazines, and not so much anymore, aspirational, because I think it's really condescending. I'm just putting words in your mouth. But like, I think when we're younger and we have famous people we look up, you mythologize them.
Yes.
But you don't want to suddenly become just a thing.
I want, for when someone meets me, for them to go, oh, you're kind of like me. And we can have normal conversations and everyone's blood pressure drops just a little bit. Everyone can just even out the playing field and everyone can feel good. I do really want people to understand that these people in this business are mostly everyday normal people who have to take the trash out as well. Sometimes they have to wash their face in the morning, have a shower in the morning, just like you do. they sometimes get spots too.
Not many of them, though. I mean, not the aspirational ones don't get spots.
No, but I tell you what, they all do. And they're lying if they tell you that they don't. They just know how to, at this point, because they have to, know how to take care of them. And I just want people to know that I'm not out of reach. There are things that I keep for myself and myself only, because I think that's what everyone should do. And nobody needs to know every inch of your business. But if you can just be giving and be kind, then...
And you're very relaxed. I mean, there's not many people that would be on a Peloton and would go, oh, you know what? I'm going to go live. Like, yes. You're weirdo. But no, but managing yourself through social media and everything, you seem to have come to that quite easily.
Yeah, because I kind of just have fun. I don't take it too seriously. I like to dress up really nicely and I'll share that with you. I also think it's a really cool way of promoting really great unknown stylists and unknown fashion designers and unknown brands. The jewelry I wear usually is by brands that you wouldn't normally see and no one would really know about. Some are by vintage designers. Some are by those people who like to look for antiques and I find those. Some are by women who just have started their own little brand and they make great things. And then there's moments where I'm totally sweaty outside running. It's the sixth mile and I hate everything because everything hurts and I'm going to share it with you. I think I'm trying to sort of like remove the guise of perfection so that people don't assume that it's perfect all the time. I'm on a bike singing because you're going to hear me out of breath and I'm going to be sweaty and it's going to be kind of like whatever note comes out, doesn't, doesn't. And I'm not afraid of that.
Could be a note, could be a squawk. Who's to say?
Who's to say? And does it matter?
Could be your mating call. I don't know. But no, actually, I remember like when you were at the movie Widows, that scene where you're running and running and running and running and running. That's insane.
That's me. I run. Yeah.
How many takes was that of like all the, because it was scene upon scene of you're running into different areas, right? So how many miles did you run?
I should have worn a watch. I don't know how many miles I ran. How many takes did we do of that? I want to say it was like 5 or 6.
But you were like the freaking bionic woman. Okay, let's do a bit more fashion-y presentation stuff. When I met you, I think you were in a sparkly outfit, but then the last time anybody saw anyone was, well, a long time ago, but in our jobs, InStyle has a Golden Globes party and you had been there and you were wearing a Thom Browne ensemble.
Like shorts and a jacket with tails.
How did your style refine itself?
I think I lost the fear of wearing things that some people might be like, I'm not sure. If you're not sure, then I'm probably very sure that I'm going to wear it. And I have an amazing stylist and the both of us are consistently looking for the thing that just is off to the left, just a little bit. Because that's the thing that gives me the most confidence. If I'm in something and it's like, I've seen this a million times, it doesn't make me feel confident. If I wear something that gives me just a little extra, then I'm probably going to lean to it.
I'm sorry, what was that again? A little extra what?
Bring your shoulder forward and back. Yeah.
You're an actress on a red carpet and I always laugh and go, if aliens came down and saw these women putting their hands on their hips and then stepping 2 steps to the right, and they go, what the hell is this?
I don't know if you've noticed, but when it comes to the red carpets, I have a lot of fun.
Oh, I've seen it.
At this point, whenever I step onto the red carpet, that's the reception that happens. And I have such a laugh. They're like, can we look over your shoulder? Blow us a kiss. Show us your nails. I love it. I just, you'll get the nails. I'll blow you a kiss. I'll do it with both hands. I'll look over the shoulder. We'll have fun. Because I also have realized that these photographers have been there for hours.
Yes.
These interviewers have been there for hours and hours. So the least I can do when I get to them is give them something to remember, give them something to smile about, give them something to laugh about, and remind them that I know that they're human beings too. There's one guy who speaks, I can't remember his name, but he speaks French and he only speaks French. And I know enough French to be like, how are you doing? And he loves it. So he only directs me in French.
So super. And they go like, you want to go super? And they go, oh, wait a minute, something's really, really good. They go, top, super top.
Yeah, I love it. And he's like, à droite, à droite, à droite. I gush. And you're like, right? And you're like, okay, that's it. And I'm like, yeah, all right, good.
Tell me, how have you, through this whole few months, I've talked to you, you know, on and off through this, and you've been super busy, but when there were times that you felt less than good, you know, when you have like a shit day, like how were you, what were you doing in your shit days?
Just finding things that could make me happy, cooking something really nice or ordering something really good to eat.
What do you cook?
A bit of everything. I'm vegan, so Impossible Burgers are my favorite. If you can make like a really good Impossible Burger, like if you get like a sweet bun, something, vegan cheese, the Impossible Burger cooked just right, so it's just as juicy. Also, I'll throw some bread and butter pickles on there, get some vegan mayonnaise on there, get some ketchup, and you're laughing. It's like a burger that you would order from a store, and it's the best thing ever. But you're not hurting yourself because it's a vegan burger.
No.
It just depends on how you're feeling. Maybe that day it's just a really good, hearty salad you want to have. Sometimes you lie in bed, you put some TV on, and you just chill the heck out. Sometimes that's all that you need.
I mean, sometimes you're like, I'm not singing for you people today.
And there are times where you're like, I feel like singing today, and that's okay too.
Okay. Is there a talent or skill you wish you had?
I wish I could roller skate. I can't roller skate.
Have you tried much?
I think I could pick it up if I gave myself the time to, but I haven't tried hard enough yet. Oh, I can't drive.
Me neither. I've never felt the urge. Have you ever felt the urge to learn?
I have felt the urge to learn just recently. Only because I was in LA and I was like, well, I would really love to be able to just go driving for a second, like just to take myself somewhere. But not really.
Okay, you can't roller skate, you can't drive. God, okay, at least you can run.
This is true.
Okay, tell me about this young fella, this young Nigerian kid, Anthony Madu, who was how old is he, 11-ish?
He was 10.
There was a clip that went viral of him dancing a beautiful ballet. And so how did you see this, and then what did you get up to?
My publicist saw this video on Facebook. So she texted me this link, and she was like, have you seen this person? And I clicked on it, and I was like, I'm obsessed. Obsessed. I said, well, what do we do? How do we help? What's his name? Where is he? We've got to find him. I then reached out to a couple of friends, and then it was myself, Susan Fales Hills, Lena Waithe, Rishi Rajani, and we all sort of pitched in to try and make sure that he could get to the ABT, because Susan Fales Hills works very closely with the American Ballet Theatre. And I think they've given him basically a scholarship to learn to get his ballet shoes going here. Which is kind of cool.
Doesn't that just warm the cockles of your heart?
Yeah.
Well, I love to ask women what they're ambitious for, and you and I both own this sweatshirt, which is by Phenomenal, and it has ambitious on it. Tell me about what ambition means to you and what you're ambitious for.
The word ambition means that the possibilities are endless. I know there's difficulty for some people to get to where they want to be, but if you keep trying, eventually the door gets knocked down and you can do the thing you want to do. Ambitious about my life. I want good things. I want good relationships. I want good things for other people too who are around me, because it's just how I am. I want the best for everyone. I know I work really hard, and I think I'm always going to be that way. I never take the easy way out. I never have. I went to drama school, came out of drama school, did plays in the middle of nowhere, auditioned for all the things, did a Broadway show, which was 8 shows a week. And my first film was me running in the middle of the night consistently. I never picked the easy thing, because the easy thing isn't the thing that's going to teach me. So I purposefully pick the thing that gives me the challenge, because I feel all the better for it when I get to achieve it.
Cynthia, what is the most badass thing you've ever done?
Playing Harriet Tubman, because I was taught about what it is to be determined, what it is to be resilient. I only had to do a quarter of the things that she was having to do, and I had a whole team behind me. I had a whole camera crew. I had a director. I had all of these people who were there to protect me. She didn't have anyone. But I think that one of the badass things I did was packing up my life from the UK and coming here, because I did not know what I was in for. I had no idea what the show would do. I didn't know if it would be a success, but I took a chance anyway. And there was definitely a 50-50 chance that I was going to stay in the UK. But I said, okay, let's do this.
Why not try? Okay, we're gonna finish this up with a couple of a cheeky tenor.
All right, go on.
It's called 10 Firsts. Okay, firstly, first drink you order.
ginger ale with ice.
Oh, nice.
Ginger ale with ice. Yeah, lots of ice. And maybe a squeeze of lemon.
Refreshing. Do you drink? I forget.
I don't drink. No.
That's right. God, you're so pure. Okay. First thing you look at on your phone in the morning?
My messages. Like texts and stuff like that.
Do you ever get overwhelmed with that?
I don't, because they're usually from really lovely people. And for some reason, the people that text me in the morning genuinely start off with, good morning. And it's always really nice.
Yeah. I don't get good morning from anyone. Oh my God. Okay. First person you call?
My partner.
Your partner in the law firm?
In my life.
Okay. First fashion splurge?
My first fashion splurge. That was my Chanel bag. My first Chanel bag.
Color?
Black. Just simple black.
When did you buy it?
Right after the color purple.
First time you owned your shit. Okay, well, if we're going to continue with our shoulder motif, the first time you really squared your shoulders.
Probably when I was doing backing vocals and I realized that I was being underpaid and it was late at night. I wasn't being given travel home. And I was like, this is ridiculous. I'm not doing this. This is bullshit. Pay me properly and put me in a car home. And I remember going, if you don't do this, I'm not working for you anymore. And they did it.
You remember those moments? You remember when you just stand up a bit taller?
Very clearly. It sounds like nothing, but it wasn't when Uber was running. Buses stop at midnight. And so you would have to get like the night bus, which barely came.
And it's not safe either. Okay, first thing you do when you see your family?
Give them a hug and a kiss. My mum's big on hugs and kisses.
Well, I bloody hope so. Otherwise, you've got to call Dr. Freud. Okay, what was your first date?
I think it was like a cinema visit. I think we went to see a film or something.
Like teenager?
Yeah, and then like TGI Fridays or something silly like that.
Oh, to have those days back. First thing you do when you're stressed?
I rub my head. It soothes me, like self-soothing. Because I don't know what it is. Maybe there's pressure points in there, but I rub my head for a little bit and then I feel a little, it sort of like calms me down and then I can think straight.
Then you're more, as we say as kids, then you're more better. Then you're more better. Okay, finally, first thing you'll do when this godforsaken pandemic shit show is over?
Probably do a live show for people. I miss that a lot. I really miss singing in front of people live. Yeah.
Or you can just go to Central Park and busk it. I reckon you'd make $50.
Do you know that's actually not a bad idea to do a Central Park situation where it's just like, I'm out here, and if you're out here, stand far enough away and then we can sing.
Start spreading the news, New York City. Cynthia's coming to sing in a park. Anyway, this has been Ladies First with Laura Brown from InStyle Magazine. We can be found wherever you get your podcasts. And I really want to thank all my bosses, the production team at Pod People, Rachel King, Eliza Lambert, Danielle Roth, Anne Ford, Anne Kane, and Erica Wong. And thanks to my team, Brian Atstein, Molly Stout, and Hayley Mason at InStyle. You can find out more at InStyle.com. Find us on Instagram at InStyle Magazine, on Twitter at InStyle, and you can find me on Instagram at LauraBrown99.